Welcome to the podcast. This episode is brought to you by Maison Beljanski, providing natural supplements for helping your body's healing and wellness, inspired by over 40 years of groundbreaking research.
Hello.
How are you?
Good. How are you doing?
I'm pretty good. Remind me, are you in Boone or are you in Asheville?
I'm in Asheville.
You're in Asheville, and how are you guys recovering from the hurricane up there? I know it looks bad.
Just still a process. It's so weird. So for us personally, the amount of damage around the house is unbelievable, and it's just still there. No matter how much you clean and what you do, we're so blessed to have Samaritan's Purse came out for 3 days with like groups of 20 volunteers to help, and they made a huge dent, but you still look around and you're like, oh my God. Like, it's just crazy. But they claim the city is coming in, and I guess they're being paid by FEMA to come in and do cleanup. So they came and looked at stuff because there's a lot of trees that are even just like half in things that aren't like didn't fully fall. And so they claim they're going to do that. We don't have like a time frame. It's nuts. It's not. But then I go, well, we're here, we're safe. And then if you go downtown, or not downtown, but to like River Arts District, it's literally a war zone.
Jeez.
And it doesn't look like anything's really been cleaned except for what the volunteers and the people did in their own like space where the artists and stuff that had spaces. But it's crazy.
Let's look at some photos. Let's see.
Yeah.
It's kind of hard to tell by photos, I would imagine, like, unless you're there in person. But yeah, look at that. I mean, buildings demolished, streets wiped out.
The water levels were above roof level. If you were near the river,
they were above roof, like the roof of your house. The water was above.
Yeah,
roof.
not for us. But if you went down, like, see that's like what River Arts District looks like, and it still looks that way. Like, and there's just debris, right? So the water was so high, the water came up like 60 feet, and all the debris that it was bringing from above flew through, and it just got caught in like trees. I mean, a friend of mine saw people, like bodies caught in trees and things, and she's having a hard time recover. That's downtown. Is that Marshall? That little town was the cutest town. We used to go there for lunch and everything, and everything is just, it's gone.
Now, was this because, so this was Hurricane Helene, right? This was, I was in Florida. I was in Jacksonville. And so this thankfully didn't really come to us. And then by the time it got up to North Carolina, it was mostly because of the torrential rains, right? And then did that. Now it just flooded the river. Now, was there a dam that broke, or what happened exactly? Because I heard different things, and you never know, you know, exactly what happened. Now, you live there, so obviously I'm going to trust what you say.
So my understanding is, so we had 20 inches of rain in 2 days. And so that rain up towards Mount Mitchell, which is north of here, that there's like a basin up there, and that basin started to overflow. So it wasn't like a dam broke. There was actually, there had been a worry. If you go back that one picture, watch, go back, wait, go right there. That's Biltmore Village. Oh, wait, right there. Those are all shops and everything that are just completely gone.
The water is just like, I mean, that's got to be 10, 12 feet tall, 15 feet high, maybe. It's hard to tell.
And that's probably when it was coming down, because it was higher than that overall. And
that's insane. So 20 inches. So 20 inches of rain based in 20, you said in 24 hours? Is that what you said?
Yeah, in 2 days. It was 2 days. It just rained nonstop.
So 20 inches, I mean, that's a lot, but you wouldn't think, like, if we got 20 inches of rain in Jacksonville, I think we're prepared for that, right? Like,
yeah.
I don't think that would, but you guys would never expect that much rain in that short a time, right?
Right. And so what happened is the basin at the top started to overflow, and it just, you know, it's at I think Mount Mitchell's at like 5,600 feet. Asheville's at 2,400 feet. So not only did it just, like, we had a lot of rain, but when that began to overflow, it picked up speed and momentum. So it started to flow down and then picked up more rain, and the French Broad River was already, you know, at its peaks. And as it came down, I mean, it just wipe things down, and it came down, and there's a like a mountain in the middle, and it went two different directions, and it went one direction to Asheville and one direction to Lake Lure. And so anything in its path, it literally just took out. So Lake Lure, we'd been there once before. It was a beautiful lake with the homes all around it, and there was a little town called Chimney Rock where you could climb this amazing rock and the views and the whole nine yards. And like that entire town and lake and all the homes are just like gone. Like the entire town is in the lake
Jeez.
because it just took everything with it. It's just the power. It's the you know. It's it was kind of like having a tsunami. Because it was the power of the water. So it wasn't just rain and the stuff came up, but because we're on the mountain, as the water started to come down, it just picked up momentum.
Now, what's crazy about this to me is that we're recording this in January 2025. And this hurricane came through in like September,
September
right?
27th or 28th. I don't know why my brain won't hold on to
I'm
the
sure it's a
date.
bit traumatizing.
Very.
So we're talking October, November, December, January. So 4 months, almost 4 months, and you're saying that, it's still like a war zone up there. That is wild. So what
It's
can, I mean, first off, before we get into other cool, fun stuff we can talk about. What can people do? Like, I've had some. I think you put together a GoFundMe. We
I
sent
did.
we donated some money there to help out because I know people needed heaters. Like, what are things, legitimate things that people can do to help? I mean, and I think people still. I wanted to talk about this too because I don't think people realize that this is still going on in our own, backyard. If you live in the United States, North Carolina is a state in the United States of people, that are struggling massively, lost their homes, lost their businesses, don't have beds to sleep on. I didn't realize people didn't even have heaters, right? So that was great. You put that together to help with heaters for people. But I'm sure people still need a lot of help. And we kind of think, oh, the government's going to come in and save everybody. And that rarely actually happens at the level that we
Nope.
hope it would. It's like I always have this dream and this wish that when at the end of the year I pay taxes and we pay a good chunk of money into taxes now every year, that I could check boxes of like, where's my tax money gonna go, right? It's like very naive but very hopeful wish of like, how much do I want to send to the military? Probably not very much. How much do I want to send to roads and schools? Well, probably a bit more. How much do I want to send to disasters like this, and like actually, how much do I want to send to politicians that are, putting laws into place that allow them to make millions and millions of dollars by, legally cheating on the stock market? Zero. You know what I mean? Like, I wish we could do that, but I know it's not realistic. But there's things we can do to help our fellow Americans who are seriously struggling right now, and it's a serious disaster. So, like, what do you recommend? I mean, what can people do to help? Where can
You
they
know,
send donations? Like, yeah.
I even have to say, even for like living here, trying to figure out where do things go, even that's a challenge. So what we did is we've been raising funds for heaters, and because it was 15 degrees here this morning, and there are still people without homes, and what's weird is that in Asheville Central, if you're in part where we live, like there's destruction all around us, but you've almost gotten used to it. But most of us still have houses, even though we didn't have a neighbor with a tree that went right through the center of their house. But most of us still have homes. So you get into this weird comfort level, and then you forget until I start watching certain videos. There's a certain woman that I follow that's a realtor that's been very active in helping build homes for people that lost everything. And the stories are just tragic. And it's almost like sometimes I have to stop listening to it because I don't know what else I can do. So we've been taking heaters up into Burnsville, and there's a whole organization of the community, and they take those heaters and they run them up. Because what's really fascinating about this part of Asheville is the mountain folk. They live in the mountains because they want to live in the mountains, and they're off these crazy roads that it's not like you just drive down the street to the city and there you are. Like they've grown up there, and it's a very different community. It's really interesting. Like Asheville has its own vibe because it's a little town, or more than a town, it's a city. But when you go outside of Asheville, There are people that have lived here their whole life and they call themselves mountain folks and they live differently. We have a very dear friend. She's our seamstress, actually, and she's incredible and she's in her 70s. And she is very clear, like, we mountain folk, we don't mess around with that other stuff. Like, they grew up a very different way and they're not going to leave. Like, this is where they've lived and that they're not going to leave no matter what. So I've heard some really interesting stories about how. Which just makes my heart like, but that FEMA and the government will pay someone if their house was gone, they will pay them with the value, quote unquote value, before everything happened, for them to go find another home. But if somebody wants to stay, which again the mountain folk do, they want to stay in their home or their trailer, even if it's a trailer, but it's getting moldy or they need help with it, they won't give them the money.
That's crazy. Oh,
That to me
we'll give
just
you
is.
my, and now I wonder what the stipulations are to go find that home too. Is it like, does it have to be a specific home in the city area, or can they find another home out in the mountains? Do you know anything about that?
I
Like, are
don't
they
have the details
forcing
on
them to
that.
like, oh, you got to go get a condo in town to,
Right.
now be a part of the system that you don't want to be a part of, but we're
Yep.
forcing you to because it's easier to control and take your taxes and all kinds of things if we
Yeah.
force people
Yeah.
into.
Yeah. So it's been, I don't know, it's just strange. And I don't have a clear answer for what can we do. Like every time I get money in, I just go buy heaters and take them up because I know we need them because it's been really cold and there's still people sleeping in tents for them, and I understand. Now, I haven't been up personally, so I'm not a firsthand witness to it, but from there's a what I believe is a credible source of a woman who's a realtor out here who's had a really great TikTok channel about what's going on. And she came together with some builders. They raised money to start building houses and like shelters and stuff, so people actually had a home. And actually, I thought this was genius. I hadn't thought of this, so I heard her talking about it, but that she had someone come and donate mailboxes because if you don't have a place to get a mail, that can't actually be your residence. And the government was appears trying to get people to leave. They did not support the fact that people were coming in and building homes. I know the Amish came in and built a bunch of homes, and even that became a problem because they didn't want them rebuilding. They keep saying, well, it might flood again, so you can't live here anymore. It's like they're trying to move them out from what it feels like.
Oh,
And it's
wow.
just, I don't know. We can go down a crazy rabbit hole with that
Right? When, and people are like, oh, yeah, that's conspiracy. Yeah, but when you see it happen again and again and again in different cities around the world,
Yeah.
you're like, well, I don't know if it's a theory anymore,
Right. Yep.
conspiracy fact maybe. Right?
Yep, we just knew it before the mainstream knew it. So it was
Right.
pre-known
Like,
fact.
I mean, COVID was a great example. It was like, yeah, I was called a conspiracy theorist since day one. Even though I was, it's like I was sharing evidence. We had, I mean, this is a tangent, but I mean, I found a study from a campus that was done on wearing masks with a similar viral infection that was like 10 years ago, 12 years ago. And it literally showed that the people, the kid, the students who wore masks versus the ones who didn't, did not do any better, and in fact, actually, if I remember correctly, did worse with spreading than the ones who didn't wear masks. And when I shared that study, it was a legit study that had already been done on a very similar virus, because they were like, do masks actually work? And I was like, look, this study shows they don't work. And they're like, delete, conspiracy theorist, misinformation. And I was like, ah, okay, I can see what's going on here very clearly.
Hey,
Oh, sharing solutions for, yeah, look at all this research we have on vitamin C, vitamin D for, fighting against viral infections, very, very similar, very other types of SARS viral infections, in fact, and shows how effective they are at, basically stopping and enhancing our immune system to support our body in fighting it off. And they're like, oh, medical misinformation and blah, blah. And I'm just like, okay, I see exactly what's going on here. And now, we're what, 2, 3 years later? I don't even know. I lost track of time since that whole madness. 4 years later, it's like now finally, the more and more information's allowed to be shared, more studies are being shared, more people are realizing, oh yeah, we were totally lied to. The people who were saying, medical misinformation are actually the ones who were putting out the medical misinformation. And now, politicians are coming out and saying, look, the vaccine's actually hurting more people than it's helping. It's like, well, yeah, of course, experimental vaccine rushed to production that is, forced upon majority of human beings. Like, are you kidding me? Especially
And
children who had like no risk. Like, how insane is
not even
that?
a real vaccine, right? It's not even, you can't even qualify it as a vaccine. That's just what they called it, so people would think that that's what they needed.
Right. It
That's,
was gene. I mean, it's gene therapy. It's literally editing and changing and transforming, your RNA and DNA in your body. Like, that's not a vaccine. That's gene therapy. And it's very experimental, and people rush to do it and then called you a conspiracy theorist when you said, nope, I am definitely not putting that into my body. That sounds insane. Like, are you kidding me? Like, a healthy person that, takes care of their immune system naturally, and then, oh, I'm going to go experiment with some. It's like, instead of just get infected by a virus, I've been infected by similar viruses my whole life. Like, it's just, people were not using logic. And the reason being is because they were so pumped full of so much fear, right? By the mainstream, by all the media, by the celebrities getting on board and promoting it and saying, oh, you're a terrible person if you don't take this, you're killing your neighbor's grandmas. And I'm just like, this is insane.
Well, I think the scariest part for me through the whole thing was that seeing the mass psychosis take effect.
Right.
That was really terrifying because you realize how weak people were, that their psychological makeup was not strong enough to withstand that arena of people saying you must do this and to say no. And that to me was just mind-boggling. So we live in Asheville, and Asheville is very left, and which is neither here nor there, except for the fact that they want to put that upon you as well. And so the whole neighborhood was aware that we were, well, let me say this. My husband is very vocal about things, and he studies a lot of Jungian psychology, and he's very like, we're not going to play that game. And so some of the neighbors had heard that, well, one neighborhood, and apparently they gossiped about us, which was fascinating to see. And so they all knew that we weren't partaking in the mass experiment, and it became a thing. It became a real thing. And I'm like, this is so weird. So the entire neighborhood has turned against us in a way because we didn't become the sheeple and follow what everyone else did. So it really showed us like how weak people are. And that to me was the scariest thing of what happened.
Well, that's why I like you. I think that's why we get along because we did the same thing. We were living, my wife and I with two kids, we were living in Santa Fe, New Mexico, which very hard left, followed every, the governor there followed everything that California was doing to the extreme. And like, if you didn't go into a store with a mask on, they called the police, they chased after you, they wouldn't serve you, right? Like, if you weren't vocal about like, yes, I'm getting the vaccine, let's do this and spreading it and all of that, like, if you weren't a part of that whole thing, you were basically cast out. And I just, same thing, like, I was in, and I'm not left or right. I'm not Democrat or Republican. I agree with things on both sides. I disagree with things on both sides. And I'm just like, I can't jump into one party or the other and go, oh yeah, this is my party, even though they're corrupt on these things, but they're good on these things. But these guys are all bad. It's like, dude, they both do totally corrupt things, number one. Number two, they both have, philosophies and beliefs that I agree with, and they don't. So it's like, I don't pick one side or the other. I try to use logic and reason and intuition and spiritual guidance to make decisions. And then it's like, it doesn't, I don't care what either what Fox News or CNN is telling me, they're both lying for sure. And I think most people realize that. But even here's the crazy thing. People who listen to, a left-wing media or right-wing media, whatever, even in the center, and you talk to them and you go, you're not getting all the facts, right? You know that it is pushing, you're getting some facts, but it is definitely pushing their political bias. Oh yeah, I know that, right? I think today most people realize that. And yet they still listen to their favorite media and take it all as if it's truth, even though in the back of their mind they know they're not getting all the information and they're being intentionally persuaded towards that political bias with oftentimes some agendas in the background that if you knew what was really going on, you would not support it, right? And
Right.
so we're in Santa Fe, and I'm just like, I'm in this town that I feel is like a little more spiritual focus, sustainability focus, health conscious, and all of a sudden COVID hits, and I felt like I was the most alone I'd ever been in my life.
Exactly the same thing. Asheville's supposed to be spiritual. Like it's in the vortex, like all of this, which was part of what drew us here. And then I realized that the people who say they were spiritual are not as spiritual as they think they are because they were not in charge of their own consciousness. Like it was mind-boggling. I really don't know how else to say it. I was just like, "What?" And we fought it the whole way. We had little masks that said mind control device is what it said on the outside. So if someone and we would walk in without stuff, and if someone really raised hell, then I would put it on for a second so they could read it, and then I would like take it off and walk around with it off at ear. And I'm like, no, I'm not playing your game. But it was really interesting that you two were in like a spiritual, what we thought, space, and yet they succumbed to the pressure. And that again was just so fascinating about what happened.
You know what I saw what happened was, like, let's say you're a spiritual person, right? And you care about other human beings. You intentionally practice compassion. You do care, and I genuinely, and I know you genuinely care about the betterment of people that you don't even know. I mean, I pray for all of humanity every night, right? I see people on the street and I want to help them. Like, I genuinely care about helping others, and I know you do too. And I know many people who are on a spiritual path care about others. And what happened, what I saw, was that our compassion, most people's compassion, was co-opted by the people in power who were pushing the fear. And so they took that compassion and they said, hey, if you care about your family, if you care about your neighbors, if you care about others, you will do this. You will distance 6 feet, which had zero scientific evidence it was going to do anything at
Stupidest thing
all.
ever.
Stupidest thing ever. You will wear a mask because you don't want to spread this. You will stay in your home. You will shut down your businesses. You will live in fear. You will get the vaccine when it comes out because you care about others, because you have compassion, because you love your neighbors and your grandparents. And so people are like, I'm in fear. Even though most people on a spiritual path are like, yeah, I don't totally trust the government. I don't trust the CDC. I don't trust the pharmaceutical companies. And yet those are the ones who are telling you, right, to do all of this insanity. And then all of a sudden they're like, oh, I better trust them. I better listen to them. Yeah, I'm afraid. And I care about these people. And like you said, I was just like, how are we who are supposed to be, how are so many people who are supposed to be awakened, aware, self-realized, spiritually awakened, not seeing what's going on and allow their compassion to be co-opted? It was very disturbing and very
Yeah.
mind-boggling, and that's why we left Santa Fe. Like, my mom is still there, and I actually enjoyed Santa Fe up until that point, and then I think we were almost either 6 months or a year into COVID there, and I was just like, I cannot do this anymore. Like, I
Wow.
can't have my kids exposed to this, can't have my family exposed to this. Like, we have to get out of here. And now we're in Florida after 3 years.
Okay.
Been here
Yeah.
for 3 years, and we love it. It's like, be a part of a state who actually cares about personal freedom. Like, to me, that's so important.
So
And
important.
then the media was like, who cares about your freedom, right? Who cares? It's like, what? Are you kidding me? And then people who care about freedom are like, oh yeah, who cares about your freedom? I'm like, you guys are stupid.
Crazy. Well, we had a really heated conversation with a neighbor because they were like, "Don't you care about the people?" And again, my husband is all on top of this, and he's so articulate and 78. So he was like, "Well, let's define care. Let's really define care." And he's like, "Does caring mean that we're going to shut down people's livelihoods and so they can't work and now they're stuck at home? Does caring mean we're going to make them wear a mask that's going to make them more sick ultimately? Does caring," when he went down this whole path about what does it really mean to care? Does it mean to care that you're going to take these people who maybe are in abusive relationships and lock them in their home with their abusers because you're afraid?" He goes, "You're being so selfish if you're doing this for you." So you're afraid because you're afraid. You want me to be afraid? He was like, no, that's not how this rolls. And it was really, that's part of the reason why the neighbors stopped talking to us. But it was like, well, because you expose the ignorance, right? When you
Yes.
expose the truth of what they're doing, and they can see that if they argue for a weak position of no, where I'm still caring, but you can lay out the facts that that's not really caring, then their whole identity collapses, right? And it freaks them out, and so then they have to just walk away, and that's what happens.
We started this group. There's a group in Santa Fe called the Unmasked Group, right? And there was like, I was like, yes, people who are actually, thinking, using reasoning and logic. And so we would meet in the park, right? Because you couldn't meet indoors anywhere, and all the places were closed. And I would go into businesses without a mask, and they would, because for me it was the principle of it. It was just like, I am not going to. Number one, I was already looking into studies that showing by wearing a mask, you are, let's say you do have the virus, you're literally like replicating it again and again and again inside your body. Instead of allowing your body to naturally dissipate it, you're like potentially making it worse. You have this humid, wet, hot environment, which helps to breed viruses, right? It's like a warm, humid environment that you're constantly breathing in again and again and again. I'm just like, this is going to make it worse for
Yeah.
me. And then I have to touch it all the time. So I'm actually like, instead of like, let me wash my hands, let me try not and cough and sneeze on people, right? Let me make sure strengthen my immune system to knock this thing out. It's like everywhere you go, people bring it down, bring it up, bring it down, bring it up, right? They're coughing into it, they're touching it. So they're constantly touching it and spreading it worse. I'm like, if I'm wearing this mask, I'm literally going to spread this thing worse than if I'm not. And I'm like, just out of the sheer principle of not giving in to this madness, I'm not going to wear one. And then they called the cops on me all the time. They kicked me out of the stores. They wouldn't serve me and all that. But I was just like, and I'm the only one in all of Santa Fe, everywhere I went, doing that. And I felt really bad because it's like people think I'm trying to hurt them and harm them. And in my mind, I'm doing the exact opposite. I'm like, by not wearing this, I'm actually helping everybody. But
Yeah.
nobody would listen to that, and nobody would understand that except this unmasked group. So it'd be like 20 of us. We'd meet outside in a big circle in a park without masks. And you were supposed to have a mask even in a park outside in Santa
Was
Fe. Can
insane.
you think about how insane that is, right? And people would come with their mask 30 feet away and watch us and call the cops.
With the cold and flu season here, it's critically important that we enhance and strengthen our immune systems. Yes, would you agree? The problem is, though, that there's so much confusion out there when it comes to what actually works for our bodies and for our health. Well, I'll tell you what I used. I used Maison Beljanski's wellness products. Maison Beljanski's products are backed by science to not only help empower the immune system, but can support detoxification and contribute to our overall health. Coming from Europe, the all-natural Beljanski formulas are now available in the United States and are recommended by top doctors everywhere. A lot of the colleagues I work with, functional medicine practitioners that work with patients with all kinds of diseases, are recommending Maison Beljanski's products to their very own patients. As a special sponsor of this podcast, Maison Beljanski has included a very special discount offer for all of my listeners. You can get 15% off your first order using the promo code Nathan, and you'll always enjoy free shipping when you order four products or more. You can grab your wellness products today at maisonbeljansky.com. That's MAISONBELJANSKI, maisonbeljansky.com, and use code Nathan for 15% off. Hey, welcome back to the podcast. Before we get started, I want to give you a free gift that I have spent over a decade researching thousands of hours of peer-reviewed studies and interviewing hundreds of world-leading functional medical doctors and cancer conquerors that lays out a blueprint for helping your mind and body become a cancer-fighting fortress for natural cancer prevention and healing. And that's my Amazon number one best-selling book, Becoming Cancer-Free. The physical copy sells for like $10 on Amazon, which you can go get that if you want, but I'm happy to give you the ebook absolutely free. Just head over to becomingcancerfree.com and you can download that ebook instantly. Again, that's becomingcancerfree.com, and it's yours as a gift for me to you for tuning into this podcast. All right, let's get to the show.
Like virtual signaling, right? They're like, I'm virtuous because I'm wearing the mask and doing what I'm supposed to be doing. So I'm, you're being bad. And like, I think they got off on that. I really think that was like an ego trip for these people who maybe in their lives have never accomplished a thing other than what you're supposed to do by the, what the, we've been conditioned to tell, get your job, get your house, whatever the nonsense is they tell us. And I think that was their opportunity to find their power. And they were like, they were power drunk. And it was crazy. I just, again, the psychosis of it's amazing, but that's incredible. They would come all, it's amazing. They will come all the way over to unmask people who they find so dangerous and say, you need to put your mask on. I'm like, what?
They literally called the cops. I was, cops came. Right. And then just watched us. And they're like, the cops watched us for like 10, 15 minutes. And then they finally came over and talked to us. And I talked to them and I was like, no, we're just mean. We're talking about how stupid this is and how everyone's being lied to. And this is all insanity. It's a fear push. What's coming next is this, you know, experimental vaccine. They're going to force on everybody. They're going to, like, we were calling out. We literally could see all the steps that were coming and we were talking about it. Okay, what's coming next? What's their next thing? And we literally predicted like every step that was coming next. Oh, then they're gonna come out with the vaccine. Then they're gonna force it. Then they're gonna make you, you know, quit your job, be pushed out of the military, all these things. If you don't take it, it's a whole push for money, for control. Like we could see everything so clearly, right? You get a group of people together who are not given into the fear. And we literally predicted like every step that came over the next year and a half. And the cops was like, okay, you guys keep doing your thing. And he left. He like left us alone, you know? And I was just like, thank you. Like the cops didn't want to deal with that. They kind of, I think some of them were like, yeah, this is so stupid. We're going to, these guys are sitting outside in a big circle, like talking, and I'm supposed to write them a ticket for not wearing a mask, which they were. They were actually supposed to write us a ticket, right? Which was insane. And some cops enforced it. And then others didn't. But, you know, it is to that mass psychosis. It's like, look, people, when the government is forcing you to do something, when they're continuously taking away your rights, when they're pushing fear, and then it's coming through the media, and then the celebrities are on board, guess what? Guess what's happening? There's an agenda behind that, that if you're not paying attention, you're not aware of that, you will get sucked into it, and it will take over your life and take you down a negative path that is actually not for your best interest.
Yeah. What do you think's coming next?
Oh,
can we go down that path?
Yeah, right. What is coming next? Well, you can see like they always what do you call it? They always kind of show you what's coming next by what they say. Right. And if you kind of pay attention to what's being said, they're like, oh, another pandemic's coming. Be ready, be aware. So it's like, duh, like they're going to try and do the same thing, but maybe this time, you know, it's something that kills more people. Then they really get the fear going, you know? So I don't think that's ever going away. I think what's happening though, is that like with RFK now getting into the you know, health side of things, I think he'll shake things up in hopefully a really good direction. I see lawsuits starting to happen that will probably get some good traction against the CDC and WHO for literally lying to billions of people.
Right.
There are governments who are standing up against it. So I think the good thing about what's happening and what may come next is enough people are actually waking up and becoming more conscious of the insanity of the whole thing, of the agenda behind the whole thing, that, you know, there may be enough, you know, concerted effort together to say, hey, no more of this nonsense. Like, we're not giving into this. And that's my hope.
Yeah.
But I also was like 3 or 4 months into COVID, I remember telling my team at that time, I was like, yeah, this will be done in 3 or 4 months. And it was like 3 years later. I was just like, I was like, there's no way people are going to, you know, go for this for that long. And boy, was I wrong. So, Who knows?
Yeah. Craziness. Crazy.
And what's next for you? So you're, I mean, you were selling your house, you were moving, and then boom, it gets underwater. You're in your house. Are you in your house right now?
I'm in my house. So we didn't have water damage, but okay. We basically had a tornado that ripped through our neighborhood. And so we live on a mountain, and the backside of the mountain, there's houses down at the bottom, but the whole backside is just trees, was trees. And you can, if you go on the other side, you look, you can actually see where the tornado just ripped through and all the trees are gone. So part of why we moved into this home is because when you were sitting in it, it was like you were in a treehouse. We had all these incredible, you know, 200-foot trees all around us. It was just magical. And they're gone. Like, they're just gone. Like, and so that's where, like, the damage comes in of, you know, we had one take out our deck and one took out our driveway and our retaining wall. I mean, there was like a 200-foot tree in our driveway. We couldn't get out for a couple of days until someone had a big enough chainsaw to come get us out, because a normal chainsaw wouldn't do it because the tree was like huge. And so that's still in the driveway. It's been chopped up in different pieces, but the driveway is still all a mess. But when you look outside, like if I look at my window over here, I just see, you know, 150-foot trees just laying on top of each other like matchsticks. And so for us, it was the wind that came through and created the tornado and all that. But we had put the house on the market the Friday before. The hurricane hit on a Friday morning, and the Friday before, the house went on the market. And so we had to pull it because of all the damage. And but now I don't know, you sit and you check and you're like, this was a big thing. My life's pretty magical. Same thing with my husband. We get an idea, we manifest, we go. Idea, manifest, go. Idea, start to manifest, and then hurricane. And so we were sitting with it for quite a while to figure out, okay, is this, you know, you make plans and God laughs and things change. So we've been kind of sitting with like, what do we do? Are we supposed to stay? What's supposed to happen? And we got clarity the other day about why we had to stay for the length of time that we did, and something closed up there. And now that that's closed up, I'm like, let's go. So I actually just bought like new luggage, because I'm like, we're going. Like, the house isn't on the market yet, but I'm like ready, because we were going to move and travel, and we can go anywhere we want in the world the way we've set up the business. And so we thought, maybe we'll move to Europe, or maybe we'll move to wherever. And so I'm part Hungarian, I believe, from what I can tell from the papers from my family. So I'm looking at getting citizenship. So my whole way of thinking now is, let's set up a process where we protect ourselves to the point where we have our freedom, so that no matter what happens, because even though it feels like the government now might shift into something that's not as insane as the last government, but stuff will still happen. So I want to have my freedom. So freedom to me is like being able to travel. So what passports do I need to have, or residencies do I need to have, so I have some place to go? And that's what I'm focusing on right now.
How was Hungary in during COVID? Do you know, like, were they super strict?
It's really funny how we started to look about where we're going to go, because we had this thought. I went and I looked at what countries were the least vaccinated. And then we kind of backed into that to see where were your freedoms. And Hungary was pretty good. So they were probably about, I think, less vaccinated than the U.S. Amazingly enough, the U.S. is one of the least vaccinated. But the greatest country with the least vaccinations was India. And then after that, you have, if you're going to Europe, you have like Albania, Montenegro, things that were not part of the EU. Like, most people would say, like, I want to move to, I don't know. We had actually thought Portugal, because they have a really good golden visa where you can hop in. They make getting residency there fairly easily. And then, but then we looked at the numbers, and like, if you look at France, Italy, Spain, Portugal, like 99% of the people are vaxxed. So that showed me that 99% of the people don't have enough strong will to say no. And that was very disconcerting. And so we kind of shifted that idea. Plus, my understanding, there's 5 countries, and I'm only going to remember 2, because Portugal and Greece, and I can't remember the others off the top of my head, are going to be testing out the vaccination card, so that you can't move around and get things without that vaccination card. And they're going to start testing that in 2025. And so I was like, okay, out of that. So that makes it more interesting. So now we're looking maybe more South America. We're just going to play. So as soon as we get to the point where we're ready to go and the house is on the market and stuff, we're just going to spend a month or two in different places and kind of play and see and get to know the people and what have you. But my intention is to have residencies in several places so that we have the freedom to get in and out of where we need to go.
Yeah, that's a good idea. That's definitely a good idea. That's right. I mean, I never thought I'd live in Florida, and so far it's been good, just in terms of like not having to worry about that stuff, right? Like they kind of closed down for I think the first month or two, and then they're like, "Nah, we're not doing this," right? And that's it. Like leave it up to the people to decide, And that was one of the things too. I pulled a study again. Most of my accounts were deleted. I was in Facebook jail for months. My YouTube account, I couldn't upload for like 8 months. Instagram accounts were deleted. Like I was censored so heavily, and I was sharing, as much science as I possibly could, legitimate science. And that's, and I was getting constantly, medical misinformation, delete my accounts. Like I've had to start new accounts for almost all my social media more than once. Like that, and I'm still getting censored with certain things that I say, even when it's all backed up by science and I put the references and all that stuff. They don't care. Like they don't care about the truth, right? When they're paid for, but and funded by these corporations that don't want people to know this information. But so far, Florida's been good. If they were to, the US were to like mandate a vaccine card across the US federal government, I don't think Florida. I think certain states would absolutely fight against it. Montana, North Dakota, Florida,
Texas,
Texas,
maybe.
which is great. So that's why I'm not too worried about having to leave the United States. The one thing I saw was like I pulled up statistics of a similar state after I think a year of masking, similar population, similar density, state, all that, where they did not enforce masks, and then against New Mexico, where they did enforce masks, right? So I pulled in, I think it was either North Dakota or South Dakota, did not enforce masks, and then New Mexico did, right? They met and they shut everything down. I can't remember which Dakota it was. They didn't shut everything down. They kept schools mostly open. They kept a lot of things open. New Mexico shut everything down. Schools were closed. You had to go to online school. Gyms were closed. You could go to Walmart. You could go to big box stores, but you couldn't go to your local mom and pop shop. It was like, I know what they're doing, right? It's like you could stand in line at a giant corporation like Walmart or Costco or any of these places, but you couldn't go to any local store or local gym or anything. And, shutting down all these small companies, all the money goes to these large corporations, which all these, politicians and people are invested in the stock market and all this. Anyway, so I did the analysis, and literally the states that did not enforce masks or shutdowns did better in terms of COVID deaths compared to New Mexico, for example, that shut everything down, enforced the strictest policies that the CDC and WHO and the federal government recommended. We did way worse than the states that stayed completely open and let it all be free. And then I shared that, and they're like, delete medical misinformation, and I'm just like, oh my God. But like, that's the stuff people don't realize. They're like, yeah, but the masks work. No, they don't. We can literally use data that we have to compare, did it work or did it not? And if you compare states, it's like it did not help. And in fact, those states generally did worse.
And there's so much data. That's the thing where I'm like, how do you not know that this was bad for you? Like, that's the thing.
Right.
I think that's the other thing. So not only do they get caught in the fear, but now there's so much information. I'm like, how do you not know this? You just got to go look past the clicker, though, right? They have the TV channel and that's all they watch. And then anytime you talk about, expanding their reach and information, they go, well, how? I'm like, there's this amazing thing called the internet. If you just go on and start looking, you can find whatever you want, but I think people are just, I don't know, they've poisoned us so much, right? With the food and the water and everything. If they just poison us enough, and all the meds that they give people for God knows what, it's like, here's a medication for this and a medication for that. Well, that just makes it so much easier to control us. People can't even think for themselves anymore.
Right. And that's, I think that's important about the work that you do, right? You work with a lot of business owners, especially spiritual focused business owners, and a lot of what you do is help people tap into their intuition. Is that right?
And being able to be in their divine flow with their business.
Talk about that. What does that look like, and how can people, like, how's that going to help people in their own life, in their business, etc.?
Yeah, so I think what happens, we've been in the conditioning. We're like, this is a business, and it feels very left brain, and most of the spiritual people like shun away from business because they're like, well, that's not very creative. But I come from the standpoint that business is one of the most creative things you'll do because you get to have so much fun creating what you want to connect with people, help shift their consciousness, and you get to do that by tapping into your divine source. What do you want to create? What do you want it to look like? What do you want it to feel like? But it's so strange because most people think business is this, like, this is how you do it, and that's it. This is the formula, and that's it. Now, with some marketing, there are formulas that really work, but I always tell people all the formulas work if you understand the strategy. But who's implementing the strategy? Because I can show someone how to run a Facebook ad to a certain, maybe it's to a challenge or something. That's one of the things we do for, we do partnerships or and work with our agency, work with people to create like a 3 to 5 day challenge for their audience. And I can show everyone how to do it. But if you haven't done your inner work and are totally tapped into your divine spark, it doesn't work. Like the marketing piece does not work without you being the best version of you. Just doesn't. And I've tried with people where I'm like, here's the formula. Let me stick you into the formula. But if they're still deeply doing work, deeply wounded, still not seeing their value, like they have maybe self-worth issues or some trauma that hasn't been healed, that will just energetically block any sales from coming in. It's the strangest thing because you would think, like, well, here's the formula. Just go do the formula. But it has to come back to the person. So everything I teach is around the principles of the laws of the universe and who do we have to become so that we can have the business we want. If not, the money doesn't stay. Even if you make the money doesn't stay because something's out of alignment. You're like, there's a missed frequency in there and it'll just poof, go away.
It's so true. I mean, I've seen it in my own life over the years. The reality is we are all vibration, right? Everything about us is a vibration, is a frequency. We are putting off a certain electromagnetic vibration from our thoughts, from our intentions, our beliefs, our spirit, our body. All right, this is all measurable with science, but our, ancient ancestors have known this for thousands of years, that we are literally giant. One of my early mentors said, yeah, we're giant walking magnets, right? And we are attracting to us that which we are, not that which we want. So we think about, oh, I want money, I want freedom, I want a nice house, a new car, I want health and happiness, and I want fulfillment. But if you're not already living that inside yourself, right, which is an internal practice, it's an awareness, it's a daily, right, meditative practice, gratitude practice, yogic practice, like all these different things that we can utilize, Qigong, to increase our vibration to that which we truly want. Right, it's becoming that which we want, and it's really, I know it's really hard, as I talk to some people about this, to really understand it, to really know, like, yeah, but how can I be a millionaire if I'm not a millionaire? How can I be financially free if I'm not financially free? How can I tell myself or believe that that's who I am and what I am if I'm not that? So what ends up happening is I see people create this self-fulfilling prophecy of, I am not that, I don't have enough, I can't pay the bills on time, I'm always struggling. And so they're constantly focusing on those things, even though they have this desire, they have this want, this outcome they're trying to achieve, but they're always focusing on the negative things around them. And then they're wondering why is my life always in this negative spiral, right? Of disease, of lack, of insufficiency. And it's like we have to break free from that and see the potential and literally increase our vibration. And then our magnetism increases, and then those things come to us so much easier, right?
When your beliefs and your desires do not match, it really creates hell on earth. Because you have these desires and you just can't reach them, but it's the core of it all is the beliefs. And that's where I think people get stuck. And they're always looking for like a quick thing. I have a program, it's called the Prosperity Vortex. So how do you get into the vortex of prosperity all the time? And they say it's a state of being. It's not somewhere you go. It's a state of being. You have to become the Prosperity Vortex. And then someone will ask me, so is there like a portal I have to go through and go do this? I'm like, no, again, you're not doing anything. You have to be that. And that's something that, gosh, I think it just takes a moment where there's a space and time for each person that's different for every person where they suddenly know it. Because I think we all know it intellectually. Like, of course, like abundance is my birthright and I create my reality and the abundance is everywhere and it's mine. And so we intellectually can say that, but there's a moment for each person, depending on where they are in their journey of prosperity, that they just now know. And as soon as you know, and you can feel it in every cell of your body, your reality changes. And then the money just starts to flow in because there's this knowing of it versus just, I know that abundance is everywhere and it should be mine too. Like, and that's, because I think that's where people get stuck. They get stuck in that, the mantras. I'm not a big affirmation person. I switch them around. I call them creation statements. So it's more of a statement of creating. So instead of being like, the I ams of I'm abundant and wealthy, because then your brain immediately goes, well, I'm not abundant and wealthy, just as you were saying. So I like to say it's more of a demand of the universe. Abundance flows to me every day. It's like it's a statement to the universe. It's like you're demanding that it happen. So I call them creation statements because you're creating with your words versus your brain saying, well, that's not true. You could just be like, no, abundance will flow every day. You can put in like a little future if you had to. Abundance will flow every day. Every day, wealth will come to me in one form or another, and I release how it comes in. And if you can just say that, like you're stating to the universe, this is what's going to happen. And that seems to be a shift because now we don't have to fight with our beliefs as much to get over the hump.
I love that. And that's so true and so powerful. And what I've recognized that really helps too for me is, let's say I have an affirmation or a statement. I like what you call it creation statement.
Creation statement, yeah.
Creation statement, right? Which is, and then when you say those things or write them down or repeat them as affirmations, then recognize every little tiny thing that shows up that looks like abundance, right? Which could be the food in your fridge. You open your fridge and you go, ah, thank you so much for this abundance of food. So then we practice gratitude and we get into the emotion because we know that emotions are, 1,000 times more powerful at attracting that which we desire because emotion is energy in motion. It's our thoughts in motion that increases our vibrations. If we get into that emotion of gratitude for recognizing the abundance, right? It's like, wow, today I had an abundance of great conversations with people on my podcast. Today I had an abundance of insights. Today, man, there's abundance of sunshine. It makes me feel so amazing. Oh, I got a practice I've always had. I get a check in the mail for $200. I'm like, thank you so much for this money. And it's constantly coming to me. I'll find a penny. And I literally, in the old days, I just walk by and go, oh, there's a penny. And then I pick it up and go, oh, thank you. Money finds me easily. And I teach my kids this and they do it too. And they're, oh man, you're so rich. Look at that. Money just follows you everywhere, right? Where I grew up poor, I grew up on the streets, I grew up, very lack mindset. And what I realized, what's helped me a lot, and I still have more work to do for sure, but what's helped me a lot over the years is that once I started recognizing and being grateful for those moments and then building trust, like what happens is you build trust in the process. You build trust. At first, that's like a belief you have to try to accept that, oh, my mind is creating my reality. My thoughts are creating my reality. Like for me, that was a belief I really had to work on accepting because I didn't see it at first. But then I would start to see, things happen, like no idea where the money's going to come to pay rent. We're 3 days late already, right? Like I need like $800. We have a brand new child. We're like struggling, working on my business in the background. And then, but I'm like, I'm practicing these things, but I'm also afraid. I'm struggling. I'm seeing the reality. And then my wife's like, wait, the bank account's negative and we need groceries. And I'm like, this is, it's like you've got the reality in front of you, but then you have this thing that you're working towards trying to accept. But then all of a sudden, I would stay focused on it and boom, a phone call would come. I get a client, like the exact amount of money I needed, maybe a little bit more came in. And I go, oh, there it is. See, it's working. And so I would reaffirm instead of going, oh man, there it is again. We're barely making rent. We're getting late payments, which is what most people do, right? Ah, just barely getting by. It's like, oh, thank you for the abundance coming in to cover my needs right now. It's coming more and more. And we just reaffirm, reaffirm, reaffirm. And then all of a sudden, it's like, you know, I mean, for me, it's been years. For some people, it's much quicker.
Yes.
It's like it gets easier and easier and easier and easier. And then you realize your own value. You realize, you know, what really matters, which is helping others, serving others, you know, helping others succeed in their goals and dreams and whatever it is that brings you passion, but being of service to others. And then you live in abundance, like no matter what. And then you just worry less and less about the things. Ideally, you know.
Yeah, it's the faith. That's the thing that gets everybody. It's the faith that will happen. And we can say we're faithful. And, you know, I just had a call with clients yesterday and we were talking about this, about money. And someone was, you know, having those moments around the contrasts of money that's coming in. And I said, well, they're like, what do I do? And I'm like, it comes back to your trust and faith. We say we're spiritual beings. We, you know, we're spiritual entrepreneurs and we talk the talk, but we're not walking the walk when we fall into the fear. So I say that money is our greatest test of our spiritual strength. And that bugs people, but it's true because it's something every single person on this planet experiences is money. And when you're looking at a bank account that has been overdrawn or you need more money for groceries or something, and you're like, what the heck? You can fall into fear. Or you can be like, no, I'm a spiritual being. I know I'm taken care of. I know that God, source, infinite intelligence, whatever the word people want to use, is there with me and I'm protected. And when you sit in your faith and that trust, everything happens for you. It opens up, but it's the fear that blocks it. But it's not easy. It is a test. It is absolutely a test for us to be in that state where when our 3D reality looks scary as all heck, that we can come back and trust and have that faith that we're taken care of. And that's the thing where I see people struggle with that most is that faith moment about, am I sure? We were talking about, I call it impact tithing. So where you're going to give money to have an impact on the planet. And they're like, but how do I do that if I have all this debt? And I'm like, well, until you start getting aligned with money, which part of the alignment is understanding the universal laws and that what you give, you must receive. Until you start living by the universal laws, that debt will always be there and it will just grow. I said, so you can focus on the debt or you can focus on living in accordance with the laws of the universe and understand what you give, you receive, and start giving money so you can get some back. And they're just in so much fear, it boggles their minds. And I'm like, you've got to trust. You can't say you're a spiritual being, but then I'm afraid that I'm not going to have X, Y, and Z because I'm not taken care of. But it is a test. I see it as a huge test for all of us.
It's so true. I'll tell you what, like when I was starting my businesses in the early days, it was like I had this dream and desire, like, yes, I'm going to donate money to help others, right? But I wasn't barely making enough to pay the bills. I'm like, okay, once we have enough money, I'll donate. So I kept having that. And then I kept struggling, right? It's like, yeah, as soon as we have enough money, I'll donate. But then struggle, struggle, struggle. And then it wasn't until I read Secrets of the Millionaire Mindset, T. Harv Eker, and started actually following his blueprint of like, you save a percentage of money. No matter how much money comes in, you save a percentage for donations, for savings, for investments, right? It doesn't matter if it's $1 every paycheck. Right. But you save that every single month. You're putting money into those minimum, those three, but you know, we ended up having like 8 or 9 different ones we were adding to over time. But it starts with $1, $5, $10. But then every month, making that commitment, no matter what, I'm donating a percentage of money every single month, no matter what. For me, I was so amazed at like how quickly that started to grow and grow and grow and grow. Now we've donated tens of thousands, maybe hundreds of thousands of dollars at this point to nonprofits when it literally started with like $2 and we were just paying the rent. But it's grown and grown and grown because I really believe that just like you talked about, it's like our beliefs, they align with our values and our actions and intentions. And then I believe God and the universe goes, hey, you're managing money well, you're doing well with it, you believe in it, you are, you know, becoming a good money manager, here's more for you to manage. Here's more for you to share and give away and invest and do all the good things that you want to do with. You believe in yourself and in the process, so here's more for you to do with that.
Yeah.
And it just feels good, right? It's like we're designed to help others. It feels good to be able to go, write a $10,000 check and donate to a nonprofit in need, and then go donate my time and energy and all of that to like actually save people's lives that are struggling or dying or, literally starving to death. I went to Africa recently and went on a humanitarian trip and donated, and then my time, and we went and took seeds and tools to farmers so they could grow food because they were literally starving to death. Like, being a part of, those are the things that I think God really cares about. It's like, there's a great documentary I just watched the other day called Death and Back, and I think it's on Prime. Highly recommend it. It's kind of a low budget film, but the stories are so powerful. People, kind of near-death experiencers or death and backers, people who die, have this experience with God, with the spiritual afterlife, and then come back into their bodies. It is so profound. And one of the ladies, one of the things that, she saw through God's eyes that was actually important to God, all the stuff she thought was important, all the human material stuff that we think is important, like, God didn't care about that. What God cared about was all the little acts of kindness and love that she did throughout her life to help others. Like, that's all God cared about. Didn't even care about her sins, like people think about, oh my God, I'm a sinner. She's like, I'm the worst sinner. God's going to hate me, send me to hell. All she felt was the most pure love she's ever felt in her entire life. And what God showed her was, look, these are all the things that I care about, all these acts of kindness of you helping others. And she's like, I don't want to go back to that painful earth. And she had made a pact with God, said, if you help me through this and save me, I will do your work. I'll do whatever you want me to. I'll spread your message. Because she was, before she died. And then God told her, remember your promise you made to me? You have to go back and fulfill it. So that's what she's doing now. But it's just like,
awesome.
It reminds you, right? Like, what's important in life? Like, all these little material things that we worry about are actually being of service and helping others and donating. But to do that, yeah, we need to build up, abundance. We need to transform our mindset. We need to implement these practices. Meditation has been a game changer for me. I think that's one of the greatest tools we have. But what are some tools that you help your clients with?
Funny, just yesterday we were talking about imagination. So that is our greatest, greatest power. And it's been conditioned out of us. You're a small child, you're at school, and you're too creative. They start to say, oh, Bobby over there is too creative, and they condition it out of us. But our imagination is our most powerful tool, and we forget about it. So yesterday I was giving them some exercises around imagination, and I always know when I'm teaching something, it's because I need to do it. So that's when it came to me. I kind of got like the ping, and then I heard it. I call it the ping when I get my little download of something lights me up. And then if I see it more than once, and I saw it 3 times in like a day and a half, and I'm like, okay, I need to go back and work on my imagination more. And then I teach it to my clients as well. But if we can just remember to create in our minds. And now I do it like before I go to bed. And when I wake up, I try to take that moment when your brain waves aren't fully awake and functioning yet. Or say you have to get up in the middle of the night to use a restroom or something. In that moment, I'm like, what am I going to focus on? Because our brain will want to go to the busy. So if I'm not in imagination mode yet, maybe I'm just, kind of rolling over and kind of waking up to keep my brain from going into something I have to do the next day. I will just do a creation statement like, I'm Kimberly Mascapape, and I attract amazing opportunities. And I'll just repeat that over and over and over until I fall back to sleep so I can keep my brain quiet. And then when I wake up, I do my gratitude and prayer. And then I said, well, let's take a few minutes to imagine, what do I want the day to look like? Or what do I want? I have a challenge coming up in a week and I've changed the whole format. So it's totally new. So I'm like, what do I want that to look like? And I'm so excited about it. So I'm like, just hold that energy and keep imagining and see what unfolds. And so I just, I'm working in the imagination because we do forget how powerful we are. And it's been conditioned out of us. We feel, silly sometimes telling people what we're imagining. Even if we share our dreams with people who are not on the same vibration, what do? Like, you can't do that. Or why would you want to do that? So we have to be so protective of it, but we really need to be imagining and creating that way.
Well, if we really believe the statement in the Bible, we're made in the image of God, image and likeness of God. And God is the ultimate creator, right? So if we are made in the image and likeness of God, then we are created to create, just like God created all of this, right? So, that's kind of, that's kind of how I look at that is we're not meant to be just passive bystanders in this life, right? That we are meant to create something magnificent and to tune into spirit, to source, to our higher self, to learn what is that? What are you here to create? What are you here to design, to manifest, that is for the betterment of all? And I think if we, I love what the Buddha said, right, which, or this was attributed to the Buddha anyway, this has always stuck with me, where he said, do anything you want in this life, as long as you don't hurt yourself and you don't hurt others. I think that's a great philosophy to follow.
Yep.
Where I can do whatever I want. I can create whatever I want. I can imagine whatever I want. I can go wherever I want. I can do whatever I want, as long as it's not hurting me or hurting others. That gives you a lot of freedom, and it gives you a lot of things, I mean, infinite things that you could do. And by putting those two things in place, okay, I'm not hurting others. I think of animals. I think of the planet in general. I think of human beings when I say hurting others, right? Buddha really preached compassion for all living beings, all animals, practicing that compassion. Of course, nobody's going to be perfect. You're going to step on ants. You're going to kill snails on accident. Like, it's not about that. It's about the practice of the compassion, right? It opens you up to more compassion, animals, yourself, for others. But by doing that, and then things that don't hurt yourself, now what do you have left? Well, you have things that are going to help everybody, and that's an infinite number of things you could do, and you could create any infinite number of businesses, entrepreneurship, nonprofits, things, charitable activities, whatever you want. But I think that's a pretty powerful way to go about it.
Yeah. I think comes back to the principles we're supposed to be living by. I mean, it goes back to, some people I know get all weird about the Bible. I've been reading it more lately and just getting these amazing gems. Isn't it interesting?
Right?
It's I find this really fascinating. It's coming to me in all different places. And I have a new mentor, Myron Golden, who is phenomenal. And he has studied the Bible to a degree, like, it's amazing, but it's not a religious thing. He's like, I'm the least religious person that you will ever meet. He goes, but the principles of how we're supposed to live are right here.
Yeah.
And it's incredible that when you really step back and you take that with the universal laws and, like, you pull it together, I'm like, the way we're supposed to be living is really written right there for us if we're paying attention to it. And that creation piece is huge. I mean, that's like the core, like, that's in the first chapter, like, you need to go create.
Yeah, no, I same thing. I've been, like, really diving into the Bible this whole past year of 2024, like diving into Old Testament, and then Old Testament, New Testament, two totally different worlds. That's for another conversation. But I mean, if you go in the New Testament and you're looking at what Jesus taught, Jesus as one of the greatest spiritual teachers, enlightened human beings of all time, like, if you just follow, like, just go to the Sermon on the Mount, right? Just go to Matthew, and, like, he tells you right there exactly how to live a life like him, right? He says, you will do these things I do and even greater. He basically shows us that we can be Jesus-like. And now Christians will take a big offense to that and go, oh, nobody can be like Jesus. We're all born sinners. There's nothing we can do about it except claim Jesus as our Lord and Savior. And that's the only thing that gets us into heaven. And yet all the near-death experiencers, all the death and backers who all have similar experiences all around the world, none of them have ever had that experience, right? They always have, hey, if I call for God, no matter how much of a sinner I was, like, he pulls me into his grace and into heaven, even if I had an experience of hell. It's like, no one's going to burn in hell for the rest of your life because you were a sinner. Like, that's just not something that has ever made sense to me. And that's one of those fear control things that, like, I've always been like, that does not make sense to me at all. But if we follow the teachings that Jesus taught, they're the same teachings in so many ways that Buddha taught, that Muhammad taught, that the great yogis have taught out of India for literally thousands of years. It's like, they're all the same teachings of love, compassion, kindness, caring, creativity, generosity, love your neighbor as yourself. But first you got to love yourself. You can't love your neighbor if you don't love yourself. All these things. So it's like, to me, same thing. I'm not a religious person, but I love the teachings of Jesus and so much of what's in the Bible. And I think it is a very powerful spiritual text that can help us in our lives, whether business owners or not.
Yep, so powerful. And it was really fun. So my husband's a student of Jung. And so we've actually been looking at the Bible and looking at the Christian archetype and how that plays a role in our ego development. And so we have conversations all the time around what happens in the Bible and like how our ego has expanded and grown, and our being as a humanity's ego, and how the ego was at a certain point in time where you really needed the church because we weren't developed enough as a race to really understand what the ego needed. And so it's about having a strong ego, not overinflated. Overinflated is weak, so it's the strong where you know who you are, which is how all of us who are not vaccinated and don't wear masks got through it all, because we have strong egos, right? You had to know who you were in that individuation process. And then tying it all back to the, again, the Christian archetype and how all the parts of the Bible kind of reflect back on our growth. And it's been fascinating. And I'm still diving into it. He's like an expert at it. He's writing a book around it. And so I'm picking up what I can pick up, but it's really fascinating. And it's amazing to me how now this stage in my life, the Bible is coming back to me in all these really fascinating ways as a learning tool. And it's just, yeah, I'd say pick it up.
The number one selling book of all time. Like, how could you not read it? But if you've never read the Bible or you're not Christian or religious, like, just be mindful. The entire, a lot of the Old Testament, certainly all the, from the time of Moses, like Old Testament, New Testament, this was like a big mindset shift for me. Was like, okay, New Testament is obviously when Jesus came around, and what he taught was actually like going very much against, Moses and the Old Testament, and saying, no, that's not, without necessarily calling it out in a lot of ways, which he did in some ways. It was like, no, we're not gonna eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth, kill each other. No, actually, if someone hits you, turn the other cheek. We need compassion, we need kindness, we need forgiveness. Like, he actually was, against the, suffering and slaughtering of animals. That's why he went into the temple and turned over the tables. What did they do in that temple? They were sacrificing animals. That's why he freed the doves and the animals out of there. Like, he was not about killing and sacrificing animals, which a lot of the Old Testament is about. Like, there's a sacrifice for everything. Everything you do wrong, you have to sacrifice an animal,
Kill somebody.
put blood on your face. You have to, like, burn them, and then give all the meat to, usually to the church. And it was just like, he's like, nah, I'm not about that. So, that's one thing to realize. You're reading the Old Testament, it's very gory, it's very bloody, it's very sacrificial, it's very, and then you go to the New Testament, and Jesus is like, nope, we need to love and care about each other and have compassion and kindness and stop sacrificing animals. And so there's a big difference between those two. I mean, I talk to people who've read the entire Bible and they didn't know that. They thought it was all just like one of the same thing. And so that's why I'm sharing it, because.
Here's what's really interesting. Someone wants to go down this path. And again, I'm not the expert in this, but I've got enough knowledge just to be dangerous. So, if you start to look at it, the Bible from a psychological perspective, then you can see the Old Testament was at a point in time when our consciousness and our ego was at a certain level, and even the ego, the consciousness of God, because it was a different. You can go so far as to say it was a different God. You like, there's a lot of people that talk about that too. And everything changes in like the book of Job. And when Job is asking why me, and part of that shift then is you see the shift in God, and that's the next psychological development of humanity. And so there's actually looking about how the ego has shifted as we've grown as humans, and that like the next phase is where I want to say, like, before it was like very God-centered, then we moved into like church-centered because we needed that because our ego wasn't ready. And then the next phase is for humans, man, people to be able to have that direct experience with God so that God changes again. So if we're connecting with God and we have an impact on God based off of what we're doing, then we will actually continue to have that impact and that direct experience as humans directly with God. And we actually will start to not need the church as much. And I think that's what's happening with spirituality, is that we realize we don't need the church. We don't need the doctrine behind it, but there's something there. So I think we break away, we go into this kind of interesting spiritual journey to discover ourselves. And then I think we hit a point we come back to the Bible and we're starting to see it in a different way. And we're like, oh, and it's because our consciousness has expanded enough for us to be able to receive it differently and see the different stages. And that's been fascinating to me. That's been like a big wow where I'm like, whew, that's really cool.
That's a very interesting way to look at it. I can definitely see that. And the other thing that, I mean, I would be as bold to say that I don't actually believe personally that Moses, Joshua, Abraham, a lot of the people in the Old Testament actually were speaking to God. That in fact they were speaking from their own ego. And maybe they were
Oh.
speaking to demons. Like, I mean, if you look at all the things that they say that God told them to do, if I did that today, right? If I literally today I stood up and I said, God's telling me to go and slaughter men, women, and children in this village over here because they're bad people. So let's go kill them. Let's steal everything they own, all their gold, all their animals. Let's kill the children because we don't need them. Let's take the virgin women. So we're going to take the virgin women as our own. They will be enslaved to us, and we'll kill everybody else. Right? That's what God told me to do. Do you think anybody today would believe that God told me to do that?
Right.
Of course not. Of course not. And in 3,500 years ago, when this supposedly happened, right? Like, God didn't change in my mind. Like, if God's an all-loving, all-compassionate, all-knowing, all-wise being of divinity, like, whether it's 3,500 years ago or 35 million years ago, God wouldn't tell somebody, yeah, let's go kill all these innocent people, rape and pillage them, take all their gold. And right, like, I really like, and this probably blasphemy, especially for Jewish people, but I mean, I actually don't believe reading the Old Testament that many of those people were actually talking to God at all. Like, how could you be? How could God tell you to go and do all of this slaughter
Yep.
and raping and stealing and enslavement and like, and that's supposed to be okay because you're the
Right.
chosen people? Like, I don't think so, you know?
Well,
Nobody would
that's really
believe that today.
cool.
How do we believe that was true 3,500 years ago?
Yep. Yeah, it's fascinating. So Jung takes it from a perspective that that's the ego self. So the self is the God image and the ego is the man image. And so the self is our God, who we are, and that's what those conversations are. So now I've started to look at everything through my husband's studies about you're not reading it from this is what happened. You're reading it from a psychological perspective and how it impacts us. And it's fascinating and it's super deep. Like I said, I have, some knowledge enough to be dangerous, but the level of depth my husband has gone into in studying this is just fascinating. And there's some Jungian books, but there's
Let's get your husband on the podcast to talk about it. That'd be cool.
yeah. Oh, he would love it. This is his that's his shtick, man. He is so, and he's so I'm like, how do you he knows so much. It's like hearing pieces of Jung and Edinger was a student of Jung who like rewrote some of Edinger's books or Jung's books so you could understand them. Because Jung is really like you read those books, you're like, what? You go through each sentence, you're like, what? And
What
so
the hell did you
and
just say? Why you gotta read
what's
that 12 more
that
times?
You're like, again? And we'll read them. And then thank God though one of the students, Edinger, who's no longer in this dimension now, but he rewrote and or re he explained stuff. So you're like, oh, that's what's happening. So there's a whole book about the Christian archetype that is an Edinger book. And then there's The Answer to Job, which is Jung's book. And then I forget which book that Edinger has that he like reevaluated what Jung was talking about. But in The Answer to Job, that's a fascinating book because that is talking about the shift in God and the ego and what that actual story is a change in God. Like Job from having a conscious level of being able to question God actually changes God. And then that's like the catalyst for Jesus coming in the New Testament where it appears to be a different God, but it's all like ego based. It's fascinating. It is just someone's like interested, it's gonna take a minute to dive into it. Like it's deep work, but it's really fascinating.
Interesting. Well, I
Yeah.
see we're running out of time here, so
Especially on that topic.
we're just yeah, no, we're just getting started in some really juicy, fun stuff. So, no, hey, thanks for coming on the podcast. It's awesome talking with you. Sorry all the craziness you guys are going through up there, and hopefully that
Yeah.
all smooths out for you and everything unfolds beautifully for you. And
Thank you.
Yeah, if you have, where can people get in touch with you and your work? And then also, if people want to donate to your GoFundMe, I know everything you're doing is supporting the people there who need heaters and things like that. So what's the best place to get in touch with you and
So
support?
the best spot overall is my website, so kimberlymaska.com. So you can find ways to contact us and everything there. The GoFundMe page, I don't know if I have a special link for it, so I'll have to bring that back up in my Facebook. I had posted them in my Facebook, my personal Facebook. So if you're looking for me on personal Facebook, I'm Kimberly Maska Pape, PAPE, versus the business as Kimberly Maska. I got married late in life. I was 47 when I got married, and so it was kind of hard changing that last name. I built the business around my maiden name, so I tacked on the other one. But yeah, you can find me at KimberlyMaska.com. And then my team right now is, they're hounding me that we'll have an amazing YouTube channel that will be turning out some amazing content. I just actually literally my new camera and mic show up tomorrow so that my studio is all set. And then I'm just going to be turning out content because I love talking about the principles and the spiritual laws behind creating your business and really being the best version of us. And then the outcome of that is having an incredible business that changes lives. And so that's be coming soon.
Awesome. KimberlyMaska.com, social media, check her name, follow her there. And thanks, Kimberly. Appreciate you.
Thank you
Thanks
so
for coming
much.
on.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Nathan Crane Podcast. Please make sure to subscribe and share this on social media. Then head over to nathancrane.com for your free ebook.
So when we're talking about, you know, what are these underlying causes and conditions of these chronic diseases, cancer, diabetes, heart disease, they all have very similar, if not identical, causes. And that's the thing, is when we get to the root cause of these diseases, we can not only prevent these diseases from ever happening, but empower our bodies to heal from them.
In every one of our cells, we have tens and hundreds of thousands of chemical reactions that are happening every second that are cycling back and forth. And it's like sort of a yin and yang.
And, you know, for me, the soul's purpose is evolution. It doesn't care about comfort, it cares about evolution. And so I think so long as we are following our soul, then we will evolve. And I think what sometimes blocks us from living our purpose, from manifesting that next level of our expression, is we have not evolved.
There is also a time for letting go all the expectations and relax and just breathe and be grateful for what you have achieved.